You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible.
Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, ma. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it like when Tatum play a Jalen on the breakaway, a Kyrie when he make a trade, and nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth that after you play it, you gotta repeat. So in depth they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. And well wishes go to Gordon. Listen, after every game is very important, Millie.
Hey there, welcome back to the Locked On Celtics Podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. I want to thank you, as always, for being part of our daily routine and making us part of your daily routine. We are the Rain and Jays, John Corrales from Boston.com, RedsArmy.com, and Samuel J. Jam Packer of Twitter.com. Here to talk about a couple of very big things, because a Game 7 that the Celtics won, that's a very big thing to talk about, and the conference semifinals, which is a very big thing to talk about, against the process 76ers, and let's just dive right into this. Sam, let's obviously start with Game 7. Celtics win 112-96, just a very thorough basketball, I'll call it a domination, because it was probably the most dominant win of the series for either team. So a game seven that was very, very much a learning experience for our young guys and very much a learning experience for the Bucks, obviously. So just let's start with your general thoughts from the game seven.
My general thoughts was Al Horford is a very, very good basketball player. I thought he was excellent, and it kind of – I was just kind of thinking about this actually in the terms of Embiid, which I guess we'll explain later. But I think Al Horford with that Game 7 proved that he was the best player in that series. I don't think long term he's going to be better than Giannis. I think Giannis is clearly has the highest ceiling out of anyone. But I think in these seven games, Al Horford was clearly the best player on the court. And it was really cool to see him kind of put it all together for Game 7. I did have the bold prediction that he was going to get 25 and 15. And I was close. Much closer than Jay King, who predicted that Tony Snell would have an impact. I think Tony Snell played 3 minutes and missed 1-3. So one guy works for The Athletic, and I'm just me. Not saying.
One guy works for jokes on Twitter. So look,
exactly.
Tony Snell, let me just say, was I can't believe how little an impact Tony Snell had. He was completely and utterly worthless in this series. And that's after having a decent season. Off the bat, I mean, he was, for I think the most of the regular season, a guy that the Bucks kind of relied on as somewhat reliable, you know, just to provide something off the bench. But
that goes to show you why the Bucks were screwed, because they were relying on big Tony Snell minutes for such a long time.
The guy played 27 minutes a game for 75 games. He was a part of that team.
That's wild. He played so much. Like, he was a staple at Bucks games, and then just to do nothing in the playoffs is kind of insane.
I'll put it to you this way. In 2 years with Milwaukee, he has taken somewhere around six 3-pointers a game and has shot somewhere around 44%. That's significant. That's a guy, if we went into a series and said, here's a guy on the Celtics who takes about 6 3-pointers a game, and he's going to hit 44% of them, you'd think that guy's going to be an awesome key player in the series. And Tony Snell did nothing, except for a couple of threes in what, game six? He did nothing. That, in all of the little minutia things that you need to win a series, that, like, getting nothing from Tony Snell from the Milwaukee perspective is one of those things you're like, Jesus Christ, if only we got something from Tony Snell, we might have won this series.
Although the Celtics got nothing from Greg Monroe. I think it just happens in a playoff series where some guys just, like, don't work, and you find that out quickly. Like, I think Greg Monroe in this, like, will have probably a bigger impact coming up against the Sixers just because they play more traditional bigs. But You know what? That's the cool thing about the playoffs is just the matchups and switching and figuring it out. And I feel like you always have faith in Brad Stevens to figure it out. Joe Prunty, I saw his press conference after Game 7. He's just like the most frustrated guy. And I felt for him, but he just seemed like he had no answers because the Bucks really didn't have an answer in Game 7. You're right. You talked about it kind of being a domination. It felt like the Celtics were in control. Even when they had that terrible second quarter where they were just like, you thought, oh, again, they never went down. And you just, it was kind of like you had faith that they were going to win the entire time. Giannis just didn't, the danger was Giannis was going to show up and be the best player in the series. But he just didn't have that game, that one game in this series. And I think a lot of that credit should go to Al Horford and our main man, Semi Ojeleye, who I thought was fantastic on him again.
I've got the matchups here for Semi Ojeleye. 43 possessions in Game 7. 43 possessions, Ojeleye and Giannis matched up. Giannis shot 5 of 11, so 45.5%. 0 of 2 from 3, a turnover, 2 assists. So 10 points in 43 possessions on 45% shooting. Against Giannis, that's good. I'll take that.
That's amazing.
That's actually, I'm very happy to take that. And as I tweeted out as the game was going on, there's no Giannis stopper necessarily, but Semi Ojeleye is a very good Giannis slower. And for a guy like Giannis, you need to basically make him uncomfortable. You need to get him to a point where he's not doing all of the things that he just wants to do. And he didn't. So he 22 points, 9 rebounds, 5 assists is a nice game. But on 17 shots and 41% shooting, that's not a nice game. That's not a game that you are looking for your star player. Chris Middleton had more of a star player game with 32 points on 61% shooting. But you need
Chris Middleton might have been the best Buck in this series. Is that a bold thing to say?
No,
I think
it's
he was insane. He shot the ball like a 60% true shooting percentage or something. He was in like, I think it's just like I directly cursed myself by cursing Chris Middleton, but in the preview pod. But he was amazing this entire series. I don't know where he came from, but it was almost like he couldn't. I've said it before. He's a goblin. It's just I have utter respect for Chris Middleton now, and I actually think he's better than Giannis in the series just because Giannis, he didn't have, like, complete games or complete – I guess in Game 6 he was damn good.
He was.
But he didn't feel like he was ever dominant. Chris Middleton, it felt like the Celtics really couldn't stop for possessions in a row.
Chris Middleton in the playoffs in that first round shot 60% from the field, 61% from three, as opposed to – his regular season where he shot 46% from the field and 36% from three. So significant upgrades in the playoffs in that series against the Celtics for Middleton. So, but look, they did a good job on Giannis. He had one really, really dominant game. Ojeleye did a very fine job limiting him. I think Al Horford, like you said, had a significant impact on the entire series and was very much the best player in the series. In Game 7, this is an awesome Game 7 line. 26 points, 8 rebounds, 3 assists on 76% shooting. That's just awesome. Just an awesome game from Al Horford. And Al Horford, on top of the offense, was probably the best defensive player in this series as well. So, all right, so with the Bucks, let's tie it up. The Bucks, this boiled down to the old adage of role players playing better at home versus on the road. You had guys like Bledsoe. Well, Bledsoe actually had a pretty good game on the road.
Bledsoe had a damn good Game 7, which was kind of annoying because there was some great antics. They had a Drew Bledsoe video.
That was fun.
Who is Bledsoe chance? Drew Bledsoe chance. And then it would have been way more fun if they got to boo after some air balls or something like that. But Bledsoe ball was really good. 9 for 12 from the field. He just kept attacking. I was actually – and I like how both dudes handled it after the game. They were just like, I'll tip my cap to the other one. Yeah, we were just battling and having fun. Well done. Well done. Good beef. Good beef. Well
that was a good one. Jabari Parker was okay, but Brogdon gave them nothing. Thon Maker gave them basically nothing. Maker was one of those guys that basically turned the series in games 3 and 4, but then after that disappeared. Brogdon.
They got 20 minutes of Jason Terry, though, and yeah. Man, that was their fun 20 minutes.
That was, yeah, that was bad.
Obviously, Jason Terry is actually a +4.
That's freaky.
If you look at the rest of the Bucks bench, it's minus double digits, minus yeah. double digits, and then it's Jason Terry, +4.
Dellavedova played not even 8 minutes and was a minus 21. I don't even know how that's possible. I don't even know.
He was bad, but it was great.
So that was basically the difference. Meanwhile, the Celtics role players, I don't know if you want to count Terry Rozier amongst them, but 26 points on 10 of 16 shooting. Marcus Morris was okay. Aaron Baines.
Baines had a great game. I thought Baines was wonderful. I was anti-Baines as soon as he came in, just because I don't like the idea that he was paired with Zeller. And I was just like, you don't need to like account for Zeller. You could still go small. That was immediately my thought. And then I thought Baines did a very good job. Even when Zeller came out, they still went small and kept with their Giannis with the five and kept Baines in. I thought Baines just brings a lot of energy and just is pretty solid on defense. And he had a decent offensive game scoring, what was it, 8 points? He made some good layups and I think he even knocked down a few jumpers. So
he had that buzzer beater.
That was dope.
That was awesome because there's that great picture of him hitting the buzzer beater and then raising that finger in the air and everybody's crowding around him. And it's just such a not Aaron Baines type of moment, but it was awesome that he had it. So I think the series just boils down to role players played better at home as is expected. And Al Horford was awesome. And Ojale was pretty good on Giannis. And I think Giannis is still kind of learning. He is still a young guy. He's only 23 and he's in, this is his third year. Like, he's got a lot to learn. And this is the second year of his stardom, really, because it wasn't until they discovered Point Giannis last season that he became that guy. So we've only got like not even two full seasons of this level of play. So I think the Celtics kind of, the timing wise, it worked out. So moving forward, when he gets to be 25, 26, 27, he'll dominate series like this.
If he ever gets a consistent jumper, he's there. You're done. Yeah, like yeah. If you have to like play one hand up against him, then it's impossible. Yeah.
Yeah,
well, I think he's better than Kevin Durant just because he's like feels like more athletic and lankier.
Yeah. So we'll see. So that all worked out very well. Well, you know, the Bucks. I'll give my shout out to the Bucks. My hat's off to them. They played very, very tough. They played very physical. They were very willing to get in there and mix it up and not afraid of anything. The moment they were not afraid about anything. The Celtics just had a pretty good game plan and enough players that could make a difference. So, like, you know, the Ojales of the world who did a just admirable job slowing their best player down. And when you don't get that kind of production from your best player, you don't have that thing that I was afraid of and a lot of people were afraid of in Game of 7 that was just a Giannis takeover. So that didn't happen, and the Celtics won. And now we are going on to face the Philadelphia Process.
Going to war, gentlemen.
Yeah.
We're going to Twitter war.
So, yes, there is the element of InfoWars Twitter, which is hilarious to me because the Sixers fans out there, at least the ones on Twitter, can be really just out there.
Well, they're super like dogmatic about the process, and so like they turn their like religious zealotry about the process into like a they're borderline conspiracy theory. So it's just like I even think one of the guys, Spike Eskin, who does the Right to Ricky Sanchez podcast, was saying that like, yeah, he like that nickname makes sense. Like we're pretty crazy, we're out there. So I think the it fits, but I'm excited for the posts going back and forth, each other just accusing each city of being more racist than the other one. It's just going to get ugly real quickly. I can just see it, and I'm here for it. The memes already started like as soon as Game 7 ended. They just got a lot of chain of them. It's going to be great. I'm here for the content. It's like I got worn down for seven games of just like – it's playoff basketball's intense, plus you're watching all the other playoff games. You're not getting as much sleep, but you need that energy boost of memes, and I got it last night after game seven, so I'm ready to go to war. Not really war. I feel dumb actually saying that out loud. I'm ready to post my a lot about InfoWars and the 76ers.
That's okay. That's okay. This is why you're big in Leipzig, Germany.
I am. Huge.
Huge. And I don't even know if I'm saying that correctly. In Leipzig, Germany. But that's where Sam Jam Packard.
Because... Well, I've been building my brand there for years.
I like the word dogmatic about Sixers, at least Sixers Twitter. Because I don't know how Sixers fans are in general, but this whole thing about the process...
They're trash, is what you should know.
Yeah. I hesitate to get into this. I know there might be some people who are like, I can't wait to see how John fucking handles this podcast, because every time the Sixers come up, I go off on these super ridiculous tangents about how I hated the process. And the process,
yeah, you're an enemy of the state of the process. I'm surprised.
Oh, my God. I hated the process.
They haven't attacked you.
So I'm trying to keep that in check because I hated it so much. And not that I don't think tanking can produce results. It's just I hated the process, the quote-unquote process. And I hate that Hinkie is so deified now that people are just like, he was 100% vindicated. Like, that bothers me. It bothers me because he's not 100% vindicated. It's just that they got a couple of guys that eventually it all worked out as far as finding a couple of stars, but he's not vindicated necessarily. I'm calming down.
All right, let's breathe. Kaizen.
Taking a breath. We're previewing the series, and it's not.
Let's talk about the actual product on the court.
So
Twitter is not real. Twitter is not real. We have to say that to people. Twitter is fake. Don't be mad online. Exactly. Screw the InfoWars.
Here's the. Let's talk about the matchups. The matchups, I think, actually aren't so bad for the Celtics. That I think if you have Al Horford taking on Joel Embiid, and I think Marcus Smart, you put Marcus Smart on Ben Simmons, and then if you want to start, we should mention at this point that Jaylen Brown may miss game one with that hamstring issue. So if they start Simmons, Redick, Saric, Amir Johnson.
The big dog. And I always have a soft spot in my heart for the big dog. I get excited anytime his name is brought up.
They would start Embiid and Covington. So I would have Smart on Simmons, and stop me if you think I'm going off the rails here. I would have Horford on Embiid. At this point, without Jaylen Brown, I would just start Rozier on Redick. I would have Jason Tatum on Saric, and maybe you start either Mook or Ojale on Covington. I would probably start Ojale because you probably want a scorer coming off the bench. So
I might put Ojale on Ben Simmons. I mean, we saw what he did with Giannis, and Ben Simmons is not going to shoot. He's really going to try to get to the rim. I think Smart would work too. I just think Ben Simmons I guess he would force him to shoot, but I think either or would work. I expect them actually to probably start Baines against Embiid and put Horford at the he played a lot against Simmons during the regular season. I thought he did a good job on him. I think because they can get away with some minutes playing more traditional bigs, they're going to try and get Baines in there just for 15 minutes a game. He'll probably play like start of the second, just so you can have a little bit more depth, and he's a pretty productive defensive player. I think they can get good minutes from Aaron Baines and get away with Joel Embiid just being guarded by him. I think it's going to be key when the Celtics are going to go small a lot, and I think you're right that the Horford Embiid matchup is what I was thinking about the most. Is I think Horford's going to have to be better than Embiid if the Celtics are going to win the series. I think Horford is again going to have to be the best player in the series, because I think that matchup is huge. Because you would think Horford or you would think Embiid has an advantage at least physically in the post on rebounding. But if Horford can kind of allow the Celtics to play five out and drag Embiid out to the perimeter, he's just not fast enough to really do much. So I think if Horford can be dangerous there, the Celtics have a chance on offense. But I think that's where the matchup is key. I think the Bucks were an odd matchup just because they kind of presented some craziness with Giannis at the five. I think the 76ers are a lot more traditional, and I think that allows you to get some more minutes out of Baines, get some more minutes out of Monroe. And so I agree. I think it's a better matchup for the Celtics. I think the problem is the 76ers are just way more talented than the Milwaukee Bucks were. They just have guys like Bellinelli and Redick who can just go off and will punish you with three-point shots. That's something the Bucks didn't do, did not take a lot of threes. If you make mistakes on defense, the 76ers will have the guys to make three-pointers, and that's, I think, what makes them more dangerous. So I'm kind of fascinated going in. I think the Celtics have a chance because, one, they're the home team, and we've seen how role players play at home. And, two, there's just – you can't really count out the Celtics. They're always going to keep things close. They're always going to play well. They're going to execute well. And, though, they have the best defense in the league.
Yes. So I think – well, let's look at what the Sixers did well against Miami. That series was –
they played Hassan Whiteside. They did that really well.
Yeah. Hassan Whiteside was complete trash in that series, which I think is hilarious because people – and somebody tweeted this at me. There's some article somewhere that people were suggesting the Celtics give up Al Horford and a pick for Whiteside to improve their defense, which is just mind-boggling hilarious. But so – The Sixers not only had a great matchup, they took advantage of their shooting. It really was the shooting of the Sixers, I think, in that series that just destroyed Miami. Besides Embiid going off, besides Simmons having triple-double type games, it was Redick, Bellinelli, Saric, one of those guys, sometimes two of those guys, going completely insane from the outside, and just you can't. If you let that happen, you're going to lose. If the Celtics let those guys get off, they're going to lose, and it's just going to be ugly. And it may go like five or six if they let the Sixers' outside shooting get easy looks. That's just, it's hard enough with Embiid. It's hard enough with Simmons. And this is why I like the matchup, however they end up defending it. But I like having either Smart, if you want to put Al Horford on Simmons, I put it on RedsArmy.com this morning, on Sunday morning. Al Horford has 68 possessions in the regular season against Simmons, on which Simmons shot 4 of 12, so not great shooting. He had 6 assists. He turned it over 3 times. So the limited information that we have shows that Al Horford can defend Simmons if he gets him on a switch or if he picks him up straight up. I think Marcus Smart can pick up Simmons. I like Marcus Smart matching up against Simmons because I actually like the height differential. Simmons has got like 6 inches on Marcus Smart, and he might feel like he can rise up and shoot over the top of him, which is exactly what we want. So I would love to have Marcus Smart being able to cut off Simmons' lane to the rim, to kind of encourage him to become somewhat of a jump shooter. And even if he's shooting within 12 feet, that he's still not great at that. And if we can get Simmons to shoot a bunch of jumpers in a game, then the Celtics, that's where the Celtics have the advantage. Turn Simmons into a jump shooter, take away those passes to the perimeter, use their length whenever Jaylen Brown gets healthy, but Jason Tatum, Ojale, use their length, use their strength to get up into the airspace of their shooters, prevent those shooters from getting good looks, and then you just play Embiid straight up and trust that either Aaron Baines, who's a really good post defender, or Horford, if he's matched up against Embiid, can be a really good post defender. However it works out, you just match up with him straight up and don't worry about helping. Don't worry about that at all. they can do it. If you stay straight up on the shooters, stay home on the shooters, play Embiid straight up, and prevent Simmons from getting to the rim, you can win that series.
I think the health of Jaylen Brown is really important in that if you don't have him out there, you're just the defenders kind of chasing around J.J. Redick or Bellinelli, or I think Saric is just a very good player for them, and he's a guy who can knock down threes. You just need Jaylen Brown to be healthy to kind of chase guys there around the perimeter if you're going to take Smart and put him on to Ben Simmons. I think you'll see a lot of different players on Ben Simmons, Horford being one of them just because you mentioned his stats against him. I think Semi's going to get some time just because he proved himself and kind of showed that he could play great defense in big minutes in the playoffs. He even knocked down a three, which is pretty cool. He drew a charge, which actually got called, which was amazing. Finally, a strike back in the war on Semi. I don't know. I think the Celtics they're still going to struggle to score. Like, they're on the road. Do you think the Celtics can win a game in Philadelphia? And that's like the big question. Or do you think the 76ers could steal a road game in Boston? Because the past two playoff series we've seen the Celtics in, or I'm not counting the Cavs ones, but the Wizards and the Bucks they just played. They've won every home game and lost every road game. So does anything change home and road? Or, like, did the Celtics win?
I think the Celtics can win on the road. Mostly because I think the Sixers are just so young that I do think they are prone to somewhat of panic. Like, if the Celtics can go out in game one and, I guess, for lack of a better term, just, you know, lay the hammer down. If they can take advantage of these matchups and go out and win going away, that would be a huge, huge, huge step towards winning on the road, because you put that kind of hurting on a Sixers team that just finished off Miami and is all full of themselves. If you put up a 15-point win, let's say, in game one, then they say, okay, this is real. This is not Miami. You come back, and if you beat them in game two, then you go back to Philly and have that, like, oh, shit, we just got smoked and we couldn't come back on them. Maybe you can steal a game there and have them kind of shook. So I think the Celtics have an opportunity to hold home court and steal a game on the road for sure. So, and let's not take, you know, let's not take for granted the possibility that, you know, Embiid, I don't know how many minutes he's going to play. If something happens, he's a high chance of re-injuring that face. You know, that's, you know, if something happens, look, I'm not saying that I want it to happen, but that there's an injury risk there. There are things that can happen in Philly that you just are unforeseen. I think
batteries could hit you, meant for other people, right, on the court.
The people who are trying to throw batteries at Santa might have bad aim, and they hit Embiid. You never know.
They've been drinking for hours. Of course they have bad aim. That's one thing Philly Sports Games does right. They give you a good 24-ounce can of beer, any flavor you want.
They do have gigantic beers at those games, I will say.
I think the Jaylen Brown injury could end up being huge, because I think it gives the Sixers well-rested kind of an opportunity to come in and steal a game, and then all they have to do is kind of win the games at home. Then the Celtics are forced to steal a game on the road. I don't know where he is. Like, there's a say that he was probably doubtful for game one, but he said he was going to recheck it and he wanted to play. I don't know what the smart move is. I can't, like, determine that. And it said that the medical people, the training staff during the game, told him the risk was a plane, and they gave the decision to him, and he said he wanted to go back in, and then Brad wasn't going to play him. So I feel like it's up to them to make a decision, but I don't think they should, like, really risk it if it's like he has chances of, like, tearing the muscle or anything like that. So I would expect them to play it safe and probably have him go game two. And I don't know. The Celtics are really going to struggle to score there. I think that's the basically the story of these broken hospital Celtics, is they're going to struggle to score. At home, they're going to shoot a little bit better. And if you don't have one of your guys who can give you 30 a game or give you at least 20, like Jaylen Brown in the lineup, a lot of the other guys, you're going to have to get like 20, at least 20 from Mook. You're going to need another guy to step up. And so far, the Celtics have been to have like a pretty good job in that they have like a deep enough talent, or Tatum can go off, or Smart or Rozier can go off, or they had different guys. But if you don't have Jaylen Brown, I think the 76ers could easily come in and just take a game, because they're playing pretty good basketball right now.
Yeah, I will agree that if they don't have Jaylen Brown healthy, then this will be a short series. It'll be in Philadelphia's favor. If they can't get Brown back, maybe they can survive game one. Maybe, but if they don't get him back for game two, then they're screwed. They just don't have enough bodies, and they need Jaylen Brown. You might even put Jaylen Brown on Ben Simmons as a defender. So
at some point, yeah, I feel like you're just going to throw a bunch of guys at him.
Yeah. So I mean, there won't be short opportunities for Jaylen Brown. But so if he's not available, then they're in very bad shape. And besides defensively, offensively, and the one thing I'm worried about with the Sixers, they have three top-notch defenders in Simmons, in Embiid, and Covington. All three guys can be on all defensive teams this year, and that's going to be a big problem. The Celtics are going to struggle to score, I think. And even though today Marcus Morris was like, I feel like we have the offensive advantage, I don't know.
I think that's just Mook being confident. Mook always thinks he has the offensive advantage.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Simmons can be a really – look, he's 6'10", and he's
– How do you think they match up against the Celtics? Like, do they – I'm imagining the Celtics – like, we'll say it's like a closing lineup where the Celtics are small. So Horford at the five and some combination of Morris, Tatum – Jaylen Brown, Smart, and Rozier. I don't know. I guess pick no Morris. We'll say the young guys and Al Horford.
Well, I mean, obviously, like Simmons and Embiid and Covington are going to be on the floor. If they want to go big, they could put Amir Johnson out there as a rim protector. I don't think they would.
They can't go that big with a Celtics roster that small. That would make Amir be out in the perimeter. They put Embiid on Horford. Do you put Simmons, like, do they have size to put on, I guess, Tatum? And do you put Covington on Tatum? Do you put Simmons on Tatum? I know it's an interesting matchup because
it depends on who. If the Celtics put Marcus Smart out there, then I'd put J.J. Redick on Smart and say just whatever. If Smart shoots, he shoots. Then you put Simmons on, I would put Simmons on whatever, Jason Tatum, and then Covington on Jaylen Brown and Embiid on Horford, and just deal with whoever else. If they put Mook out there, and if it's Mook versus Saric, then if from a Philly perspective, I say fine. Let Marcus Morris say, oh shit, I got Saric, and take a bunch of mid-range jumpers and deal with it, because either he's going to make those shots or he's going to miss most of those shots. And from Philly's perspective, I would live with that. But Covington and Simmons length on Tatum and Brown with Embiid as a rim protector against Horford. Like, Horford's not going to be able to back Embiid down.
That's why they would have to go small. You'd have to drop Horford or Embiid out to the perimeter and try to, like, really get some spacing that way. I think, like, that's going to be the interesting matchup. Kelly Olynyk had a great series against the 76ers. Basically by being a small ball five who can shoot, I think – Horford taking and making threes will be important in this series when they go small. Just because as much as you can draw Embiid away from the hoop, the better it is for the Celtics. Just with scoring, driving and kicking. I think that's really the key matchup. I think Horford has to be better than Embiid for the Celtics to win the series.
Yeah, I agree. All right.
Well, there we go. So it has been said.
What's been said has been said, and that's where we are.
So we've arrived.
Let's assume that Jaylen Brown doesn't play game one. Do you think the Celtics win game one or not?
I do. I think they're going to be winning at home. I think they can. I think they're playing pretty good basketball on the defensive end. I don't know. I like the more I think about it, the more that I think the talent is in the 76ers' direction. But I just think it's a really hard arena to win in, and the Celtics play pretty damn good defense and have the effort, and they're going to be close. And I think that with Jaylen Brown out, it's obviously going to be difficult, but you just end up starting Marcus Smart. I think Semi Ojeleye has shown that he can play some serious minutes. I think you get more minutes out of your bigs. I think they can survive a game one punch. They're just going to need good shooting performances from Rozier, Tatum, who I think is going to be – I think Tatum, this is one of those games because he's been hearing about Ben Simmons, Rookie of the Year. He's going to try and be out there proving himself, and I'm excited to see what Taco J has to say. It's going to be – it's kind of like one of those prove-it moments where, because he's going up right against another guy who I guess is in his class, and it will be interesting. The guys are going to need to show up and put up a big number on the scoreboard in terms of scoring. I expect Mook to play well against the 76ers. I just feel like that's just him being from Philadelphia will help the situation. I have faith in the Celtics to be able to kind of pull out game one, and just because I guess I've – been at four playoff home games so far, and the Celtics have been the better team for all four of them. Maybe I'm just riding that wave. Maybe I'm noticing a pattern when there hasn't been one.
All right, well, I'll take it. So, official prediction, since this serves as the...
Bucks in seven. No, I mean Celtics in seven.
Bucks in six. Bucks in six. What a shitty chant that was. Bucks in six.
Well, it's related to Brandon Jennings being an idiot, so I'm actually kind of a fan of that chant. Do you know the origin story of that?
I don't actually. I heard that
they were playing the Cavs, and Brandon. I think they lost game one, and Brandon Jennings goes Bucks in six, and then the Cavs just swept them. so they.
All right, that's funny then. All right, so okay, I will say Celtics in seven. You couldn't possibly draw any other prediction out of me, even if I thought they were gonna get swept by the Sixers.
I think it's Celtics in seven. That's what my heart says. My brain says Celtics in seven as well, because I think with my heart.
It's a very Stephen Colbert thing to say.
Truth is out there. People of InfoWars would know.
All right, I'm in. Celtics in seven. I think the Celtics. I really do think the matchups are actually pretty good for the Celtics. I think they can make this work. So
Hold on. We have to choose a one player that I'm going to curse by. Who's going to be the worst player in the series? The player on the Sixers who gets you the angriest? Because I think it's got to be TJ McConnell.
I'm going to say Ersan Ilyasova. He's always got a way of just...
He's got a real ugly face. And I don't like to judge people like that, but he's got a real bad one.
Yeah, And if I'm recalling correctly, I could be wrong, but I always feel like Ersan Ilyasova has like games against the Celtics.
He's killed the Celtics. I feel like also Marco Bellinelli does the same. And having both of them on the roster is not something I'm really excited about.
I remember like after the All-Star game, Jaylen Brown put out that behind-the-scenes video of everything, and it ended with him at some sort of like adult fantasy camp with a bunch of fat guys in jerseys, like, and he was like taking questions, and the guy he said he hates defending the most is Marco Bellinelli. So Jaylen Brown hates guarding Marco Bellinelli because Bellinelli is always moving, is constant motion, and you can't rest at all. He's constantly just going from baseline to baseline, and Redick's the same way. It's kind of like the Ray Allen type of stuff where you're constantly going from one side to the other. You're making those flex cuts. You're just kind of curling up and catching shots. It's hard. As a defender, you're constantly on your toes. No chance to kind of like chill out and say, all right, I've got this guy. It's not like you're guarding John Wall. And John Wall sits in a corner when he's not in the play. And he just sits there and you're like, okay, I know he's not in the play, so I can just stand here on my heels and not worry about it. If Marco Bellinelli's not in the play, he's making you still kind of jump around all over the place. So, yeah,
same with Redick. But I got the perfect solution for you. It's a little guy I like to call Shane Larkin. He's the perfect defender. He's a burst of energy. Just have him chase him around. I think actually, like, thinking about it, he'll probably have a – like, thinking about the guard matchup, especially if Jaylen Brown is hurt, but thinking about the guard play, just with Simmons being their primary, like, point guard, it's interesting how the matchups work. Just, like, who do they have on there who as a traditional point guard, I guess, to guard someone like Terry Rozier? Do they put J.J. Redick on him? Do they put Simmons on him for size? Like, I don't know. It's just going to be interesting how the guards match up. And one person we haven't talked about, but – it'll be fascinating to see what kind of impact Markel Fultz has, if any. Like, he had some moments in the Heat series, but he was the number one pick. He's plenty talented. That's, like, a real interesting kind of X factor that the 76ers have to kind of bring off their bench, because the Celtics bench, we've seen them really struggle to score points. So winning the times in which Horford is not on the court, and if they have that kind of person they can go to who can kind of change the game – that'd be huge for them. I don't know how the Celtics exactly – the bench matches up. I think the thing about the 76ers, they are pretty deep. They're not going to have – I don't think they're going to have as many like bench lulls as the Bucks did. The Bucks bench is really not great. But with Bellinelli, Eliasova, McConnell is like decent. The big dog, I don't know how much he's actually going to play. But then Fultz, I think, is the most interesting one.
Yeah, Fultz is going to be super, super interesting because obviously we're not looking at him to score a ton, but it's going to be, Fultz against the team that traded down and didn't want to draft him because they had a guy that they liked better. So I think there's going to be an interesting storyline there with Fultz saying, hey, look, you guys didn't want me. You wanted Tatum instead. Let me show you how wrong you were, because it could have been Markel Fultz in this series against the Sixers. We could have been talking about Fultz starting, and how do you defend Jason Tatum off the Sixers bench? Like that very easily could have been a storyline. But so it's going to be very interesting to see what Fultz's impact is. I don't think it's going to be huge, but the Celtics bench is thin, and if Jaylen Brown doesn't play, they may not have many answers. And it's going to be interesting to see how long certain guys play, how many minutes certain guys play. Is Marcus Smart able to play 35 to 40 minutes in this series per game? Fultz could be – maybe Fultz is that annoying guy. Maybe Eliasova is the wrong answer. Maybe it's Fultz. That would suck.
Yeah, that would be
– I'd be really upset about that.
I'm going to be upset no matter what. I mean, it's who are you kidding? That's half the fun.
That's it. That's the joy of watching basketball and playoff basketball. So, all right. So I say Celtics in seven. You say Celtics in seven. We'll see. We'll see what Sixers InfoWars Twitter has to say about us, because I've already been getting some of their shit. And I'm sure you're going to get plenty of their shit because you're.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be fun. It's going to be a real interesting seven-game series, which starts Monday night, weirdly. There's no reason. I don't know why they didn't start Tuesday night, because the next game is on Thursday, but whatever. Monday night, and then Thursday night, and then they play Saturday at 5, and then they play Monday at 6 p.m., which is a shitty start time, but I don't know. Whatever. So. That's the first four games of the series. That's the schedule, and we'll see how it goes. Celtics are obviously – they've got the home court advantage, and hopefully they can hold on to that. So, all right, that's our season, our second-round preview. If you have not subscribed to the podcast, I hope that you do find this show interesting enough that you do subscribe to the podcast. If you are a Celtics fan, you want to check out Locked On Sixers, go for it. It's going to be a fun one. I've been listening to a ton of Locked On Bucks for that first round series. I'm going to go listen to a ton of Locked On Sixers now going to this series. It's always fun to see what the other side says, so go check them out. And if you are new to the podcast, please subscribe. If you are a subscriber, please rate us 5 stars. Give us a good review and share the podcast with all of your friends, your neighbors, your enemies, random people on the street. Let them know they should be listening to the Locked On Celtics podcast. We are part of the Locked On Podcast Network.